Welcome to the Nanda Cast, brought to you by Nanda International. We explore evidence-based nursing diagnoses, giving clinical nurses, educators, and students the tools to deliver safe, effective, and patient-centered care. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Nanda Cast from the International Nursing Knowledge Association. I'm Dr. Heather Herdman, the Chief Executive Officer of INCA, that was formerly known as Nanda International. We want to thank all of you today for your participation with us. Today, I am pleased to introduce Jessica Urey. Jessica is a registered nurse and a nurse life care planner whose work highlights the importance of making nursing judgment visible in complex and long-term care planning. She has also served in leadership roles with the American Association of Nurse Life Care Planners. Her professional experience offers an important experience and perspective on how NANDA nursing diagnoses can support clinical reasoning and help to clarify nursing's unique contribution to specialized areas of practice. So welcome to the NANDAcast, Jessica, and thank you for agreeing to talk to us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
So just to get started, I want to hear a lot about your journey in life care planning, but first of all, for those who may not know, perhaps you could give us just a brief explanation of what the field of life care planning really is within nursing.
Yes, a lot of people, nurses included, aren't aware of this specialty. So the American Association of Nurse Life Care Planners, which is the AANLCP, has a definition, and I'll read it, and then I'll kind of explain in layman's term. It's defined as the protection, promotion, and optimization of health and abilities for individuals and families that are affected by catastrophic injuries, chronic and complex health conditions. Nurse life care planners apply advocacy, judgment, and critical thinking skills using the nursing process to develop long-term or lifetime plans of care. These plans include the future costs of identified interventions and associated costs for health maintenance, health promotion, and optimization of physical and psychological abilities for the life expectancy of the individual. So basically, it is. So I think it's based on the term care plan. So what happens is somebody that's had a catastrophic injury, which originally people think of catastrophic as the burns, traumatic brain injuries, but it's catastrophic is whatever for that individual prevents them from living the life that they were before their injury. Okay. So for some people, it's, you know, an ankle injury, a hand injury where they're suddenly have to use their left hand instead of their right. But basically, the majority of this is used through litigation, but it can be used through through a couple of other specialties. But we make recommendations for future interventions and future care and what those costs are so that related to that event that's getting litigated. So if it was a car accident or a work injury or slip and fall. And so they try to either, you know, settle the case, whether it's at trial or beforehand, and set reserves. And that money gets set aside to pay for all of the care that the individual is going to need.
Oh, okay. I see.
So it's simple. It's like, you know, what do they need? Why do they need it? How often do they need it? And how much does it cost? Mm-hmm. So we try to get them to live as close to an independent life as possible. And if that's using DME, if that's using home health aides, nursing care, anything to be able to have them, you know, we use that health promotion, you know, that holistic care. It's how to get them to live as independent and respectful as a life as they're able to based on any chronic injuries or illnesses that they've sustained based on whatever this incident that we're working on.
Well, that's really an important portion of nursing that sometimes I think we don't think about, when, especially in America, where we're very focused on tertiary care, hospital care, and then what happens to patients when they go home. So that's such an important component of care. So I'd be interested in knowing how did you get involved in this and kind of tell us a little bit about your journey and maybe about how the nursing diagnosis component became important in your practice.
Yeah, so I did ER trauma for about 12 to 15 years, adult pediatrics, dabbled bunch of different things. I did interventional radiology. I did pharma education. I did research where we did endpoint adjudication, where we looked at endpoint data of clinical trials, like, does it meet the definition for this trial of, you know, what a heart failure event is? Or, and so I was looking to get into something else. I had always looked at other, you know, being an entrepreneur or other businesses. I was considering going into legal nurse consulting. And I was kind of looking into that. And somebody that my husband knew is a life care planner. He's a nurse, and he had no idea what she was doing. He's like, but she has her own business and she seems really happy with it. You know, I asked her, you know, if she would talk to you. And so she explained what life care planning was. And for me, it just resonated. It's in, and not to take anything away from legal nurse consulting, but for my brain and how it just, life care planning was like, this is, it's what they need. What does it cost? And it's in this sort of a sandbox, a very specific way to do it. And so to be a life care planner, you know, there's several courses out there, several organizations that provides, it's a 120-hour course. For nurses, there's a focus, you know, on the nursing process. So a lot of professions can be life care planners. So basically you take the 120-hour course, and then there's entry-level certifications in life care planning. And that kind of helps give credibility, especially in the litigation field, to say that I've met the standards for expert work. I've done the education, and I meet this criteria. And then I quit my job and went in and, you know, was hoping for the best. And it does take longer than people think to get business, to get clients, to talk to attorneys. Looking back, I'm like, the first couple attorneys I talked to, I hoped I actually knew what I was talking about. But you just learn, and being involved in the ANLCP is, I made a lot of connections. I had people to ask questions to, still do. There's a whole group of us. We're constantly asking questions. We really support each other and hold each other up, and kind of, when you work independently, it's, you have somebody else to just bounce that idea off of, which is wonderful.
And having professional organizations are so good about that, that networking component is so critical.
It is. And I always say it's definitely not, you know, the old school nurses eat your young, there is none of that in the ANLCP. We are so supportive. There are several that are in my area. We are not fighting over attorneys. We'll refer to each other. It's very helpful. But yeah, then, so what I did, which others, you know, I always recommend, is I started subcontracting, which is where I did some work that somebody else signed. So I did medical summaries. I did some coding and costing. And had somebody else in it, you know, gave me guidance. So whereas a normal case would take 5 hours, it was taking me 10 to 15, which I didn't get paid that, but it's a lot of the learning curve. It taught me a ton. And so just slowly started building my business, and being involved in the association also gave me more experience talking to other people, hearing other perspectives, and, you know, being able to say, you know, I was active in this conference and I helped with this journal. And so again, being part of a national association of nurses was really helpful.
Great.
But back to like nurse and life care planning, it's very needs-based. It's meant to manage symptoms, reduce complications, maintain function, and optimize independence and safety. One thing we don't do is we don't do anything with insurance or third-party coverage. Mm-hmm. Everything we do is, which we call is UCR, which is usual, customary, and reasonable for where that patient lives. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, you know, costs, you know, where I am in Philadelphia are probably not the same as where you are in Wisconsin. It's very different. Originally, when all of this started, there was a lot more phone calls of calling an office, you know, what do you charge for this? You know, what is it when somebody doesn't have insurance or self-pay? And again, even when you make calls, sometimes you get different answers depending on what you talk to. Are they doing a discount? And now, especially in the last 10, 15, 20 years, there's a lot more aggregate databases where you pay for subscription. They collect charge data from millions of data sources. And so we have access to that to use and to make our recommendations for the future costs. Mm-hmm. We don't implement the plan. We aren't case managers. Some businesses have that as the secondary, is once the case settles and does that, or we at least refer or recommend a case manager in our life care plans to help with the implementation. Because as everybody knows, the health system is complex and confusing.
For sure. So that's great. So you develop the plan. So it's similar to in many countries where what I see where the registered nurse develops the plan of care for the patients, but there aren't enough registered nurses. So then they have technical assistants or support staff who actually implement the plan under the guise of the nurse. So in this case, it would be under the guise of a case manager who would make sure that the plan that you developed gets put into place. Is that right?
Yes, and we hope so. I mean, it's kind of a tricky situation because we're hired by the attorney. We give the attorney the plan with the expectation, and we hope that the attorney then, when it's all done, gives it to the patient, and then they can implement it. And it kind of helps, when especially if there's a high dollar value settlement, a lot of times they put them in a special needs trust so that it doesn't impact any of their benefits. And so every time somebody needs a wheelchair or pays for hospitalization, that trust pays whatever the balance is or the difference is, so okay. that it's not impacting any of their services.
Right. That makes sense. So tell me about how nursing diagnosis helps you in this field.
We use it to help support our recommendations. As nurses, there are a lot of recommendations that we can make independently. We don't need a doctor. And again, in these plans, they're recommendations. They're not prescriptions. They're not saying they have to have it. These are what we think that they're going to need based on everything they've had. We think there'll be benefit from doctor's visits every year, every 3 months, every 2 years, sort of depending on what it is, monitoring, managing prescription refills. Are they going to need more diagnostic tests? Physical therapy, occupational therapy. And so the nursing diagnosis helps support of, if we say that they have a nursing diagnosis of pain, well, we have to remember that the nursing diagnosis are a response to a condition. So are they coughing and deep breathing? Are they walking and exercising? Are they sitting too long? Well, if they're sitting too long, are they risking for skin infections or pressure ulcers or poor diet? So we're looking at all of these diagnoses, and they kind of help support why we're making these recommendations, why we think that in some cases, no, they don't need physical therapy, every year. But maybe a physical therapy evaluation every year where they have oversight of their home exercise program, kind of see, do we need to strengthen this? You've met this goal. Let's add to this. And so that you can keep being independent and not needing to go to physical therapy.
Right. Okay. So as I'm listening to you talk about kind of long-term planning or long-term care planning, it's complex situations, chronic conditions, needs that change over time. And so in that context, when you think about diagnosis and using those diagnoses kind of as the basis for justifying the care that people need, how does diagnostic accuracy come into play? How do you work with your members, or do you work with your members to ensure that they're confident in diagnosing so that they can build a more consistent plan of care?
Yeah, so we, anytime we do in the ANLCP, when we have our journal articles, we always have nursing diagnoses that are relevant to that article, as well as in our conference, we always try to have or consider the nursing diagnoses and kind of address that. So how does the accuracy help? Nurses are diagnosticians. We analyze all the data from our nursing assessments, and then we draw conclusions based on actual or potential health risks. So nursing diagnosis is one of the standards, the scope and standards of the ANLCP, which is defined by the ANA and the ANLCP. It's It helps us to identify evidence-based, patient-centered, independent nursing actions. Since we are making recommendations over their whole lifetime across multiple settings, it helps us to minimize the risk and then promote the optimal function. We want to anticipate the effects of aging. We know from evidence-based literature that post-traumatic arthritis sets in around 20 years. So if somebody's had an injury to a joint, they're more likely to have arthritis in 20 years. And so then you kind of look at what are their limitations. We know their limitations now. What are they going to be in 20 years when arthritis sets and things get worse? And so we try to make recommendations that can help them until then. And then when does that change, when we can kind of anticipate things start getting more difficult as they age, they're stiffer, they're slower, sure. Their disability or makes it more difficult to do just day to day. We have a lot of patients that have back injuries and spine, and in our assessment, I always say is it tries to get all those soft symptoms that aren't in the doctor's office, that you're trying to tease out how they've accommodated their injuries without even thinking about it. And a lot of patients with back injuries will say, it's so hard to bend over, do shoes and socks. A lot of patients say they don't even wear socks and they will only wear slip-on shoes. And it's just something you don't think of. Or I've had a few patients with shoulder injuries and they're like, I can cook, but I can't actually pull a casserole dish out of the oven. Or I can boil water, but I kind of have to drag it across the counter and try to drain it without splashing myself. It's things that you don't think about, but it impacts how are you going to cook for yourself and feed for yourself?
Right, sure. Absolutely. So you're not only diagnosticians, you're really kind of prognosticians. You're having to kind of think about what's going to happen that we don't even have signs and symptoms for yet, but that down the road would make sense that you would see.
Yes.
That's a lot. That's a lot. So how then in your field where you're working in consultative roles, you've mentioned that you work with attorneys, you work with care planners, or sorry, case managers. How does or do you use the standardized languages to make the contribution of nurses more visible, or are you able to use the diagnoses with your attorney colleagues or with colleagues in other disciplines to help them understand what it is you're looking at?
So I think it helps using the standardized language helps, validate what we do so that it's all the nurses are using the same language of, we have the whole nursing diagnosis, but within those, we have all the risks for. And those are sort of help support more of the future, or, we're recommending physical therapy because we know the risk of falling if they're not active and they're not doing certain things. Having the standardized language differentiates what we do compared to somebody else. And I always explain the difference between a medical diagnosis versus a nursing diagnosis. As nurses, we don't make the medical diagnoses. So when I list them in my reports, I always say they're from the medical records. But nursing diagnoses I make independently based on the past, which is the records, the present, which is my assessment, and the future, which is what my plan is. And so it kind of helps support why I'm making the recommendations and what the rationale is and looking at the bigger picture of what are we trying to promote and prevent? And we obviously can't prevent, all of these risk factors, but we can try to get them as optimal as possible with as much independence as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think thinking about, those risk factors, I worked in a newborn ICU was my background, so we were similar, like when we would have kids that were really, really premature, you knew there were going to be long-term sequelae long after that kid went home, and trying to think about how to prepare the parents, what risks can you help to mitigate? How can you teach the parents to do things in a different way to maybe decrease the risk of something happening? It is kind of it's almost like being a detective, trying to figure out what might happen down the road or what might come down the road. And I've always found the risk factors to be very helpful from that perspective, because, you know, when I would review them as I was making a plan of care, sometimes I would think, oh, geez, I didn't even think about that. That's really important for this kid because of XYZ. So I can see where that would be helpful in your area as well, for sure. So, you know, I'm sure you're aware there are many nurses who think of nursing diagnosis as something that's only used in academics, or it's only, you know, like the nursing professors, you know, torture students and make them do this. And that when they get out in the real world, they won't have to do it anymore. Or they think of it solely as a documentation tool, where, you know, we like to think of it as a way to kind of, as you said, beautifully differentiate what nurses do from what other professions do, and to really show kind of what nursing judgments encompass, which is different than what other professional judgments encompass. So in your practice, you know, what does your practice show that's different about nursing diagnosis that you might want to tell a student, like, don't ignore this because this is how you really can use it in practice?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember, I mean, I'm a diploma nurse, which doesn't exist anymore. And I remember spending forever doing those care plans, but I don't think, you know, they have you do them. And I don't think that for me, like, and again, I was the, you know, 18, 19, 20, I didn't think about them of what it actually meant. I was just doing the motions. Exactly. And then I was an ER. And then I was an ER nurse. And so we didn't do a lot of that because we were in constant movement. But I honestly think when you stop and look at what the nursing diagnosis are, you do it every day. Absolutely. And you just don't think about it.
Absolutely.
it's second nature. It supports everything you do and why you do it. And you don't even realize you're doing it. Like, you know that, you know, if that patient, like I said, has pain, and, you know, are they coughing and deep breathing? You know, if they're not getting up and moving, well, you know, there's risk for pressure sores and there's risk for pneumonias. And if they're, you know, having these emotional side effects of, you know, sadness, hopelessness, and looking at, you know, what are some of the more sequelas and what can you do to kind of help that? I think it's second nature. And, you know, I've been a nurse long enough that I just do it without thinking about it. And I think more people just need to step back and be like, you're doing this without even realizing it.
Absolutely. I say that to students all the time. You know, it's not, when you're in practice, you don't have to do the whole, you know, I mean, people often say that NANDA requires that three-part statement, the diagnosis as evidenced by, you know, related to, which is not true. NANDA has never required that. But it is a good teaching tool in that it helps the student to think, okay, I'm saying that they have acute pain. Well, related to what? What's causing the pain, right? Because we want to treat the cause of the pain. And then how do you know they're having pain? Well, here are the as evidenced bys. But when you get into practice, it's like that just starts to click. You don't need to go through that exercise in your, well, you probably are going through it, but you're going through it at lightning speed in your brain. And so you're not having to kind of write all that stuff out. You're able to just kind of say, you know, acute pain and move on, because you know all those other answers. They're already in the documentation somewhere else. You don't need to rewrite them. It's hard to get students to understand what that exercise is for unless you really articulate that for them, you know,
You know, when I first started doing this, and I just list the nursing diagnosis in my report in just, you know, a two or three column. But at the beginning, I was trying to do the whole as evidenced by, or there's too much because of these care plans. And I was like, okay, I step back. Yeah. I'm overthinking it. I'm just, these are the diagnoses and these are why. Like, you know, if I can say that, it's like, that explains why, you know, some patients, like I said, you know, we get a, and originally, like I said, it started with these huge catastrophic injuries, but life care planning in general has changed. And it's, you know, a lot of chronic pain, spine injuries, a lot of knee and ankle injuries from auto accidents, where they're getting, tibial plateau fractures, which from auto accidents, which in depending on the exact location, a majority of them end up with knee replacements in 10 to 20 years because all of the weight is on where that fracture is and that joint degrades. Ankles, you know, and when they have all these surgeries, a lot of times they have more complications. They need the hardware out. They're looking at maybe fusions or more surgeries in the future. But with back pain, one of the things I always ask is, you know, if you drop something on the floor, can you pick it up? And a lot of them are like, I'll just leave it until somebody else comes home.
Oh, wow.
Because bending over is so difficult from, you know, their lower back and their hips, you know, they have grabbers, but so then look at it. Okay. They live home alone or they live at home. Can they clean the toilet? Can they clean the baseboards? Can they, you know, can they carry a laundry basket? Some patients say, yeah. Like, can you put it in and out of the washing machine? So, or the dishwasher. Some patients take everything out of the dishwasher, put it on the counter, and then go because that constant twisting, they flare up so bad that they can't do anything for the rest of the day. So that helps support why I say they need, you know, and I personally recommend when I include it, it's just, you know, an allotment of hours per week for them to say 10 hours a week, and then they can figure out how they want to implement that. So if somebody's doing those dishes for them, they are now in less pain and can participate somewhere else in their life where
more mobile.
And be more mobile. Whereas if they did that, then they're in more pain and then they're less active and they're less participating in their life.
Sure. So home maintenance is important as well as body maintenance, right? So
yes.
Yeah, that's right. Great. So what do you see as the main challenges in applying not only diagnosis, but applying like the nursing process in a way that's meaningful within long-term care planning?
I think when you look at a lot of the diagnoses, most of them are for acute care. So it's finding and applying it for long-term chronic potentials in the future. So I think that's one of the challenges. And I think the other one is, like you said, people are, I think, a little resistant to it or don't understand how it can help support what you do and why you're doing it.
So I'm immediately thinking we need to get together with a group of you and, you know, we have a classification development committee that's looking at diagnosis, but also now as we move into NANDA 360, looking at outcomes and interventions as well. But we really need to get with you as experts and say, you know, tell us what are those things you see that we don't have so that we can figure out how to develop diagnoses in a way that fits taxonomic structure and et cetera, but that meets your needs. So I'll put that on Camila's list, who's the chair of our classification development committee, to reach out to you, because it's really important that as a terminology group, as a classification that aims to represent all of nursing, that we're able to do exactly that. And where we see gaps, and we know that certainly long-term care and even community care are gaps that we have. Getting with groups like yours, it's very important for us to be able to continue to develop a classification. So we'll be coming back to you on that. When you see the process done well, so when you know if you think about a case that you've done and you walked away from that and you think that was great, that was like I really did a good job there, what are the outcomes or the changes that you notice for the person who's at the center of that care? Because ultimately that's what we're all about, right? Is that person's care? How do you measure that? How do you kind of pat yourself on the back and say, job well done?
So it's a little more nuanced than that, because why we develop these care plans, we don't implement them.
Right.
So we, and some life care planners do case management, but in the litigation field, you're supposed to be unbiased. And so some people do a lot of defense and a lot of plaintiff. And so if you're going to implement it throughout the legal process, then you're showing bias. So you kind of have to not implement until a case manager would implement it afterwards.
Okay.
So, and that's sort of one of the things is you submit it to the attorney, and you may not hear unless there's new records, new changes, or the case is going to trial.
Okay.
So when the case, you find out that it settles or it goes to trial, then you're kind of done. So you're putting it out there to, for all of this, but you're not 100% sure like where or when. But one of the interesting things is when you're in trial, you're educating the jury on what a life care plan is, what is your role, mm-hmm. and why do they need the things that they're doing. So I think some people don't understand, and yes, being an expert witness can be intimidating, and some people want no parts of it. And there are some that I've done thought I'm like, I did great. Some of them I'm like, that was not my best. But you know, you're there to actually educate the jury,
right?
Not the judge, not the plaintiff, not the defense as much. You're teaching the jury why they need all of this. And if you can explain that and articulate why your recommendations, the basis of your recommendations, that's your ultimate goal.
Okay.
So that they have those resources. But again, it was interesting last, not 26, 25, somebody presented at our conference whose brother was a spinal cord injury from an auto accident. And because of that later, she ended up becoming a life care planner, but explained, you know, what the life care planner put in there and all of the recommendations, you know, doctor's visits, physical therapy, depends, skin care, you know, DME assistance in the house, like a shower chair and, you know, the handheld and all of this stuff. But because these are in context of litigation and this was an auto accident, there's policy limits. Mm-hmm. And so why the care plan may have been, I cannot remember any of the details of the numbers, but say the care plan was $12 million to provide the care that he needed for the rest of his life. Because of the policy limits and the way the lawsuit was, either policy limits or however it settled or was the trial went, say he got $2 million. Well, mm-hmm. now you're trying to fit all of that care within the confines of the financials that you have.
Right.
So now the case manager is trying to get creative with, you don't want to stretch equipment, but like, how can we make sure that they don't run out, and how do we make sure that they get the best care ever? And she said, you know, he doesn't eat enough because he's worried about food, but he's worried about incontinence. So he sometimes doesn't drink enough. And so then it's this.
Yeah.
And then again, we had somebody presented this past conference on the social determinants of health, of accepting the patient where they are. And she gave some really neat examples of some struggles with certain cases where crazinesses that you're like, okay, how do I provide good recommendations within the confines of this person's lifestyle?
Right.
Which, you know, is part of the nursing process is what we're supposed to do, but when you actually have to do it, it can be difficult.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, you know, I find this all really fascinating, and I think it's going to be interesting for people, you know, both in the United States, but also outside of the US, because I don't know that these positions exist in all health systems. You know, what message would you leave for nurses who maybe want to incorporate nursing diagnoses more consistently into their practice in terms of how you became comfortable with that, how you became used to? You said you kind of went through a period of where you were writing everything and then you were like, okay, this is overkill. I just need the facts. So what's the judgment? How did you get yourself to a place where you're comfortable with that?
Repetition and just keep doing it. You know, going through it, you know, flipping, I think the book is behind me, but, you know, going through the list, because I have them all written out as just the list. And then sometimes you're like, does that one fit or not? Let me look in the book and then it'll give some qualifications and explanations, you're like, okay, that one doesn't fit, or that one does fit. And so it kind of helps, but it's repetition and using them breeds familiarity.
Yeah. Great. And I love that, because basically what you're saying is validate, right? So just because it sounds like the right diagnosis doesn't mean it is. But if you look and you say, okay, well, here are the diagnostic criteria, and yep, my patient meets those, or no, my patient doesn't meet those, then that improves our ability to diagnose accurately.
Yes.
So great. Well, anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Just, you know, I love being a nurse life care planner. A lot of us are independent owners. We work for ourselves. There are some companies that have other companies of life care planners, but a lot of us, like I said, are independent practitioners. But within the ANLCP, and then there's several other organizations. It's just, it's very collaborative, and having people to talk to and connect with. And, you know, we have now every Monday a huddle, and it's just for our members to kind of be like a little listserv and bounce things off ideas and ask questions. And nice. Sometimes it's just to see another face, because we're at our computer or our desk all day. And sometimes you just somebody else to talk to. But I think it's you know, being a life care planner, you can see some of the differences, what your recommendations will make, and how that'll change their lives, with knowing that. I mean, one of the examples I had was a kid who was a HIE anoxic event, and she was 5, and the mom, you know, carried her up the third floor apartment. But as she was 5 and she was getting heavier. And so we were hoping that at least with some of the settlement money, they could afford to get a handicap accessible apartment, because eventually she's not going to be able to be carried. And she's going to be, they can put her in and out of a wheelchair. And mom's like, I have to stop halfway up the stairs because she's getting too heavy. Mm. That at least they could be in a handicap apartment where they can get in and out with the wheelchair easier as she's going to get bigger. And so sure. You just think about the differences that, like, those little things that you may not think of. And again, it's the social determinants of health. You're trying to do the best you can within where they are, but just something as simple as, you know, can mom get her in and out of the house independently?
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. Well, thanks for joining us on the NandaCast. And I hope that everybody enjoyed the conversation that I've had with Jessica Urey. And I would encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter, which you can find at www.nanda.org. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find links to purchase the NANDA International Nursing Diagnosis Definitions and Classification book on the website. And until next time, we will continue to define nursing knowledge one concept at a time.
Thanks for listening to the NandaCast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard here, or you want to challenge our thinking, then let's continue the conversation. Join us and become an active member of NANDA International. Until next time, keep shaping the future of care and defining nursing knowledge, one diagnosis at a time.